Welcome to another episode of the Canadian Space Society podcast, Space A. I'm your host, Mahima Kapoor, and this time back with a new season interviewing more exciting guests on our podcast. So we're starting off this season with somebody who I got a chance to actually speak to recently at a space medicine panel, and I was extremely fascinated by his insights and everything that he had to say about space and the profession and the Canadian space industry. So today we're talking with Dr. Michael Gallagher. He is the president and CEO of Association of Spaceflight Professionals Incorporated. That's an organization that's developing early stage human in the loop space experiments and technologies. Also, he cares for patients in rural communities in Alberta and Canada's north. In April of 2010, he completed a Canadian Space Agency-sponsored aerospace medicine elective at NASA's Kennedy Space Center. He became a finalist for the Aerospace Medical Association's Jeff Myers Young Investigator Award for preliminary investigations into lower body negative pressure as a possible countermeasure for bone loss in space. So, based on that very decorated introduction, this is very clear that he's a super exciting person to talk to about all of these things, health in space, as well as aerospace medicine in general. So welcome to the podcast, Dr. Gallagher. How are you doing today?
Great. How about yourself?
I'm really good as well. Thank you so much. So let's dive in. I got a couple questions for you, which I hope you'll be able to answer and that you'll enjoy answering as well. So my first question is, tell us a little about your background and what drew you to the space sector.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm a family physician. My training was in rural family medicine. And I think, I mean, I've, like a lot of folks in space, have always had an interest in space since I was very young. I remember going to the Museum of Science and Industry in Chicago and seeing the space shuttle, seeing an exhibit on the space shuttle. And I think what was really interesting was I'd never really thought I could be part of the space sector in any sort of meaningful way. And then there was an opportunity that came up from the Canadian Space Agency to basically do an elective at Kennedy Space Center in Florida. And they had sent out this email to all the medical students and ended up applying and was very lucky to be selected for that. And so completed that in 2010, became very interested in kind of space health and some of the devices that are used for being able to keep people keep people healthy in space. And I came across this device called the lower body negative pressure device. The Russians had used it for a while. And they developed a lot of the technology around that. And then I saw a version of it that was made by the Canadian Space Agency. They were using it to treat, basically, it was called orthostatic hypotension. And that's where astronauts, when they come back to Earth, sometimes their bodies aren't as used to, you know, getting blood flow to their heads, so sometimes they can faint. And so I'd had a bit of an interest to see, you know, is there a way that this maybe applies to bone loss? Because I'd seen some interesting studies that had shown that there appeared to be whenever there was a bit more venous pressure in the limbs of dogs, rats, you actually started to see increased bone formation. So that was kind of, you know, the thing that kind of got me into the space sector, and I've really kind of wanted to figure out, okay, well, how do I keep involved in this field, and certainly with rural family medicine. I mean, you're very much asking similar questions that you would in space, in terms of if you have a sick patient in front of you, you ask, okay, well, what can I do with what I have here? That's the same whether you're in a small rural town or whether you're up in space. You ask, okay, well, how do I get this person to a higher level of care if I can't deal with their medical issue where they are? And then I also ask, you know, who do I call for help? And certainly in space, you're not going to have a full hospital with lots of specialists and that sort of thing, and same sort of thing in a rural community. So, you know, that that, you know, that those sorts of things, you know, not only just the amazingness of space travel and space exploration, but certainly some of how it can be applied to helping people in Canada really kept me interested. So
absolutely love that about your career and your journey as well, is that you're doing a lot of stuff, you know, grassroots within Canada, and then a lot of that is being applied to space and vice versa. I remember finding that very interesting the first time I spoke to you as well. So it's very fascinating. So let's dive in a little bit more into, what do you think are the key challenges right now in space medicine? And then we'll talk later about how, you know, we're going to resolve those, but maybe just highlight for me a couple key challenges that you're seeing right now within space medicine.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, certainly when we look at, and a lot of folks have given this overall picture of what it's like to be in space and how hard it is on the human body, and kind of to encapsulate that. I mean, space, you know, you could almost say space makes you age really, really quickly. That's not a perfect analogy, but certainly things happen, like your bones do start to, your bones start to get thinner. Your heart can start to also get a little bit weaker and that sort of a thing. You get a little bit of, gets a little bit smaller. You can get kidney stones in space. You're certainly starting to, we talked about kind of coming back to Earth and that sort of a thing. Not only do you have a higher degree of ability to faint, but certainly also getting your balance back in order is something that's really a big challenge, because when you're in space, you really don't know, your body has trouble sensing which way is up. And so kind of, to get oriented again, that's really, really quite important. And so from the perspective of saying, okay, well, you know, if we're trying to develop certain things that are going to help astronauts, a question might be, is that a way that we can help people live longer, better, healthier lives, especially as they start to get into their 60s, their 70s, their 80s, that sort of a thing. So that's a really interesting part of space. I think from the rural perspective, it goes back to, those questions that I ask when I see a sick patient in front of me in a rural emergency department, and also I'm sure what people ask in space if there's an astronaut who's ill. The question is, how do we do that better? How do we better care for folks who are in our rural and remote communities in Canada? And how do we care for people better on an exploration class mission? And how do we do that? How do we do that in a way that delivers better outcomes for those patients?
Absolutely. And I think, again, that's, same theme of applying everything back to space and learning from that and applying it to Earth-based applications, I think is very interesting. But the piece that I think is very fascinating is that you've also not only, of course, studied this and, the disciplines that you have studied, but you've also lived this, closely in that elective that you did at the Kennedy Space Center. So tell us a little bit about, the kind of training that you got there, taking that elective. I know that you did some altitude and hyperbaric chamber training, but what was that like? Maybe describe, your experience and your journey there. And then I have a follow-up to basically ask, how did that training open up your thinking around fin space in general? Because it sort of personalized the experience for you, I'd imagine. So I'd love to hear about that whole experience.
Yeah, well, I think probably the most exciting part of that Kennedy Space Center experience was being able to actually see a space shuttle launch. I didn't think I would see a space shuttle launch at all during the time that I was there. And somebody, one of the folks who was there had emailed me and said, well, hey, would you like to be able to see a space shuttle launch this time? Or would you be willing to come in at 12 a.m. so that you could see a space shuttle launch as opposed to 8 a.m. the day of the election? I said, absolutely, yes, I do. I want to do that. Incredible to be with the medical triage forces during that time period, right before launch, seeing the space shuttle launch, seeing the things they were looking out for in terms of contingency planning and that sort of a thing. So in terms of the sheer excitement of it, I mean, that was an incredible, incredible moment. At other times, I've been very lucky to be able to see And you mentioned a bit with regards to altitude chambers and that sort of a thing. So later on, I did do the University of Texas Medical Branch's Principles of Aviation Space Medicine short course at Johnson Space Center, and that was many years later. But that I think from that experience in that altitude chamber, and certainly I'd also was at a place called the NASTAR Center in Southampton, Pennsylvania, and did the altitude chamber training there. It's something it's very interesting to see about. So basically, what with the altitude chamber, you're really in there to figure out how your body behaves when in a situation where basically you have very, very low partial pressure of oxygen in the atmosphere and that sort of a thing. So I mean, you're basically up like it simulates you're up at depending upon the chamber, it could be 25,000 feet. It could be lower than that. But really, you're seeing how your body reacts to that. And I was amazed to kind of say, okay, wow, first what seems to happen is I get a bit lightheaded, then my fingers tingle, and then I basically, if anyone's watching me, I get very discoordinated, but I personally don't know what's going on. And part of why that's important is that if you're ever exposed to that situation, I mean, that can be very dangerous if you're piloting a spaceship or an aircraft or something like that. And certainly there have been instances where people have died in those sorts of situations if they are in an aircraft and they don't know that they're mm-hmm. basically they're losing oxygen. So I think kind of as a big takeaway, space exploration is very interesting. It can also be very dangerous, and it's sometimes dangerous in ways that you wouldn't expect. And so that's why it's so important to be able to understand the science behind what could potentially affect you in space and prepare for it adequately. And I think it's also when we look at, okay, how does this apply on Earth? We certainly in medicine see lots of patients where they have lower, they're not getting as much oxygen into their body, and they have what's called a low oxygen saturation when we measure something using an oxygen saturation monitor on their finger. And there are people who can become delirious, there are people who can, have issues with consciousness. Certainly one other thing I also noticed was that during one altitude chamber at the situation at NASTAR Center, they gave us a color wheel, and they said, hey, look at this color wheel after we've been at that, quote unquote altitude for a long period of time. I think it was probably 15,000 feet or something like that. And I looked and then at the colors, and I pointed out all the colors, and then they put oxygen on me, and I saw those colors change before my eyes. So when I think back to my patients who might be dealing with lack of oxygen, you certainly see why people can become delirious, or why people become, people can just really, you just see how much that affects the brain, and you see, and so that just gave me a lot more insight into what my patients must be going through on Earth.
Right, absolutely. And I think the piece that you mentioned about just learning about, some of those survival instincts and all of the things that you went through personally, whether it's, delirium or the oxygen issue or just being disoriented in general, it was interesting that you were able to kind of get more insight into what your patients are going through, and you're more empathetic towards their experience as well. So that's really exciting. Coming to, as a physician, when you're trying to think about what this might look like in the future, do you think that there's going to be a component of maybe space survival training for all physicians, in case of emergency? Or do you see that, space medicine is kind of blossoming as a separate discipline from Earth-based medicine? Because I think what's exciting about, say your career is that you're able to kind of see correlations between the two. But do you feel that they're sort of, tied together, and maybe there will be a time where all physicians will have to be trained in, you know, space survival, just in case there's an issue or we need to, you know, evacuate or something, you know, hypothetical like that happens? Or do you kind of see them as sort of separate disciplines that are doing their own thing? And then maybe there will be a hybrid of, you know, physicians like yourself who kind of dabble in both worlds. So I'm just curious about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and what's interesting, there's definitely a, there's definitely a crossover between regular medicine and space medicine. That's also the case when you look at dive medicine and aviation medicine. But I do think that right now space medicine is an incredibly small niche field, in an even smaller niche field called within the umbrella of another small niche field called occupational medicine. And a lot of that is, you know, you can sometimes go into a small subspecialty to get training in occupational medicine. Certainly there's a lot in military medicine where that happens. In terms of space survival skills, I think that's probably going to depend on how far we progress with human space flight. I think if human space flight is kind of like it is right now, where only a few people go, only about 600 people have gone to space, that sort of a thing, probably you're going to see it, you know, you probably won't be seeing a lot of space survival skills being applied to all of medicine necessarily. But yeah, I mean, if for some reason, you know, there are a lot of big innovations and we're traveling back and forth from space and it does actually become routine, well, yeah, then you might see that integrated. Now, I mean, there's a lot, you know, and this applies whether you're, you know, doing dive medicine and or regular medicine. I mean, there are a few kind of key things that you need to know about treating a patient in an emergency situation that kind of apply across all sorts of different fields. And that's certainly making sure a patient has an airway that they can breathe through, making sure that their lungs are functioning well and they're able to move air in and out of their lungs. And then also that blood is circulating around their body and doing specific interventions to help with that. And depending upon the environment, that how you do that might change a little bit. And certainly in space, you know, a huge problem is people are floating around. And so if somebody's heart stops, I mean, a question might be, well, how are you going to press on their chest to actually get blood flowing to the rest of their body? Or how are you going to, if they're not breathing well, how are you going to stabilize them so that you can actually get air into their lungs and that sort of a thing? And so, as we kind of go back to, I mean, space is one of those things where, yeah, it's amazing. It can be dangerous in certain ways. And some of the dangers are actually fairly subtle. You almost don't really think, okay, well, how you kind of look and say it's really, really difficult to be able to do just something in terms of saving people's lives that would generally be really easy on Earth. I mean, you have gravity on Earth. You can just lay a patient down and then you start pressing on their chest. But in space, you have to say, okay, we're both floating. How are we going to arrange this so that somebody's going to be able to, you know, we're going to be able to get the blood pumping through a patient's body. So I guess to answer your question more directly, I still think it's going to be a niche. Space survival skills are probably going to be a niche area unless we start to go to space very routine.
Right. No, that makes perfect sense. And one of the cool things that you mentioned was sort of the rate of innovation as being an accelerant of you know, space medicine evolving as a discipline, and then subsequently survival skills and then physician training. So I was curious about, you know, what are some of the most powerful innovations in space health today that excite you? You know, I know you spoke about some of the lower body negative pressure work that you've worked on, but also the thing that, you know, the early stage human in loop experiments that are currently underway at, you know, the space flight professionals. So what are some of the things that excite you today that either you're working on or in the industry that you've heard of that you're like, you know, this would be kind of a game changer?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, certainly, I think like a lot of other folks at NASA, I think there's or a lot of folks at NASA, I'm very interested in LBNP still. And I think it's something that the space community is kind of rediscovering. It had been used a bit by the Russians for a while, and now it's kind of come to, they're starting to kind of say, could this be used for other things? And so one thing that started to emerge a lot more in you know, the recent, fairly recently, has just been just how vision can change in astronauts who go to space. And there's some question as to whether lower body negative pressure might actually help out with that. I have a little bit of an interest to say, okay, you know, might there, based on some of these interesting animal studies I've seen, I have a question, might this also help with bone? And certainly, when you look at exploration missions where you're on a very small spaceship and you can't bring the usual advanced resistive exercise device that they have on the International Space Station to help you exercise, I mean, we're going to have to figure out new ways to be able to help astronauts maintain bone mass. So I'm certainly very interested in that. Certainly, one other thing that I'd love to see, and this is kind of that thought of, can we develop something for space that could also be useful on Earth, is yeah, the one thing we're trying to kind of, we've had some University of Toronto student teams in engineering trying to design components of this device, is to say, can you take these big auto transfusion devices that are in operating rooms that take a patient's blood, wash it, and retransfuse it back into the body? And can we make those smaller, simpler, and not having to require a tech to be able to operate them? Because if we can do that, well, geez, that's gonna really help in a small remote community that doesn't have blood, and if they see a trauma patient. It's also, I think, going to help a lot in space, where if you're going to Mars or on the moon, you maybe fall into a trench and break your leg or something like that, and there's some bleeding that's going on. Could that help retransfuse that blood back into the body in some way? And so it's to kind of start to look at some of those concepts there. There's also there are a whole lot of people working on a whole lot of very interesting things and looking to try and see, okay, you know, how do we solve the space radiation problem? There's an organization called Trish in the United States that's really trying to fund some of that very, very, very bold, cutting edge research that helps space technology advance farther and helps ensure human health so that we can push ourselves farther into space.
Absolutely. Yeah, there's a lot going on. And it's always, I always find it so fascinating when someone says cutting edge, because truly almost all of it seems cutting edge, right? I don't know any space innovation that's happening right now where you're like, oh yeah, like I've heard of that before. Like it's all so novel and new, and it's also exciting to be working on those projects. So yeah, very fascinating, some of the things that you spoke about. Now I want to transition to just talk to you a little bit about, you know, your current ambitions and your current role. So currently you're at the Space Flight Professionals Organization. Tell us a little bit about what the organization is all about, and you're the president and CEO. So what does that mean for you professionally and personally?
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, really what we're trying to do is we're trying to unlock access to human spaceflight for more people, in a nutshell. And what that really means, and what we've tried to do is kind of through these different projects, we've been trying to kind of say, okay, how do we contribute meaningfully to the space sector in a way that will require people to validate these technologies, not only in what are called space analog environments, things like parabolic flight on jet aircraft, where you simulate weightlessness, or perhaps in a desert where mm-hmm. you simulate a Mars mission, that sort of a thing. But then also eventually validating these things on suborbital and orbital flights. And so I think what's really neat about that is it would allow for more folks who are working in working in universities, graduate students, professors, physicians, and engineers and other folks to be able to be part of the space sector in the way that wasn't possible before, because there just simply weren't opportunities to do that sort mm-hmm. of thing.
So super excited to hear more about the work that you guys will do. My last question for you, Dr. Gallagher, is what is your number one wish for the future of Canadian space? It's a pretty broad question, but I'd love to know what your ambitions and what your number one sort of desire is, maybe, as across your lifetime, something that you'd like to see happen.
Yeah. Well, Canada is very uniquely positioned in the world in terms of being an environment where our efforts in space can really translate in a unique way to benefiting our society in a way that, is maybe less possible other places. I mean, when we look at Canada, and it's funny because I go coming to Victoria, I check the weather app and say, wow, let's see what Calgary or Edmonton is like. Let's see what Ottawa is like. And then I also look and say, okay, let's see what Oslo is like in terms of weather at this time of year. Let's see what France is like. And you really kind of, look back and say, wow, where I grew up that's not usually what humans experience. Like people don't usually experience like minus 20, minus 30. People aren't usually spread across such a massive landmass. I mean, we certainly, a lot of us huddle along the border for warmth in all of our big cities, but there also are a lot of communities that are smaller, but still very, a very significant part of our country that are spread throughout the North. And we need to figure out how we deliver solid healthcare to them. And again, as I certainly mentioned before, I mean that addressing those issues is tied very much to us being able to operate well as healthcare professionals and engineers and scientists in these very extreme environments and coming up with solutions to the problems that are faced there. And what better and more extreme environment than space to be able to be part of in order to develop some of those solutions to those problems, and in doing so in such a harsh environment, being able to bring that back to Earth to help how we do things better in Canada, like caring for our patients in the North.
So Dr. Gallagher, those were all my questions for you today. Thank you so much for being on our podcast. I hope you had fun answering all of those questions. Any final thoughts before we end off today?
Well, I just want to say that it's been an honor, and thank you so much for thinking of me. I really enjoyed the biotech conference, and I'm just really happy that there are so many folks who are interested in space and interested in pushing humanity forward in that regard.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for everything that you do, and we'll hopefully chat with you soon.
Sounds good.
Stay tuned for more exciting episodes from the Canadian Space Society. Bye.